God Emperor had provided and taken our steel to the enemy's throat. But the order to advance never came, and so we waited. Waited for the guns to begin again, and ours to answer in kind, and us stuck in the middle. If I had been a different sort of commissar, I might have urged the colonel to seize the initiative, to advance into glory, or glorious death. But it wasn't my place. Even so, I sometimes wondered about the stillness of it all. Why had command sent no orders? Had they simply forgotten us? Or worse? A ridiculous thought, but it had happened before. If a report had been filed listing our regiment as destroyed, then for all intents and purposes we were destroyed, and no amount of argument or not being dead would change that. To admit error was unthinkable. The Departamento Munitorum didn't make mistakes. The Imperium's war machine was infallible. This was a fact, inviolate and inarguable. And yet, I pushed the thought aside as I always did, if such was the case, there was nothing for it but to hold and wait for reality to catch up with the paperwork. We would be ground to nothing eventually if the soup didn't swallow us first. In the meantime, I would do my duty, as the colonel was no doubt doing his. I had finished by the time the guns began their song anew. I could not sleep, though I was weary. I had not slept in 2 days. It wasn't the noise, I was used to that, but rather the excitement. It wasn't often I executed 2 men on the same day. My pulse was racing, and it was hard to sit still. I wanted to be out, to be about my responsibilities. I left my quarters, taking care to lock them behind me, not because I thought it would keep anyone out, but because if I came back and found it otherwise, I would know that someone had broken in. It had happened once, early on. Apparently breaking into the commissar's quarters had been regarded as a rite of passage before my arrival. My predecessor had been known to keep a stash of Amasek hidden beneath his cot. I had poured it all out in my first hour with the regiment. By my second hour, I had made my first execution when some fool had slunk in looking for the bottles. I shot him on the spot. No one had tried to break into my quarters since. But still, I locked them. The regiment was awake, even as the sky turned dark. Crackling lumens hung from the shelters and netting, casting weird shadows on the walls of the trenches. Men and women sat around, eating cold gruel from tins, or leaning against their posts, alert to enemy treachery. The soup was noisiest at this time. It seemed to grow agitated as darkness fell, and I could feel it twitching beneath the ferrocrete slabs. In places, it was already swallowing them, and I saw soldiers desperately attempting to scrape it back. Once I'd seen a trooper swallowed up by a wall. He'd been sleeping on duty, so I'd left him to his fate, though it was more peaceful than he deserved. This memory was uppermost in my mind when my reverie was pierced by the high, thin whistle of an enemy shell. I did not look up. Only a fool looks up. I knew what was coming, and I had no need to see it. I pressed myself tight against the wall of the trench as the barrage rained down. Mud seethed as fire filled the trench line. Men and women were flung into the air, some whole, most in pieces. The ground convulsed beneath me and the soup surged up, lapping at my shins. I cursed and climbed onto a firing step, trying to escape its pull. More explosions hammered the line. I heard ferrocrete braces crack and buckle. A nearby shelter collapsed, burying those who'd sought safety within. Others rushed to their aid, only to find themselves sinking into the boiling mud, as I almost had. The wall behind me burst, and hot lashings of mud splattered my coat. It thrust out, pummeling me like fists. The ferrocrete slab cracked, and mud oozed over and through it, even as the firing step began to sink. I fell, and the soup, welcomed me, greedily swallowing my hands as I tried to brace myself. The stink of it filled my nostrils. It was like tar and rotting meat and spilled promethium. I gagged, wishing I'd worn my mask. I flailed, trying to right myself as it sucked at my hands and feet. I could feel the heat of it through my boots and gloves, and I knew I'd be lucky to get away with blisters. To my left, the trench wall gave way, all but burying several unlucky men. This part of the line was going to be gone in moments. I staggered free of the mud's embrace and dragged the nearest soldier to his feet. "Up! Get up!" I had to shout to be heard over the roar of the guns. "Grab your kit and move down the line, quickly!" I shoved him in the direction I needed him to go and started hauling others to their feet. "Go! Go! Go!" They moved slowly at first. Some wasted time trying to help others. I left them to it. The soup would have them, or not. If they made it to safety, I would discipline them. It is a peculiar thing to move through a trench that is rapidly filling. The walls close in even as the ground rises. As you are buoyed, you are buried. Bones spill from the walls and chunks of stone and bits of forgotten equipment bob to the surface. Slabs of ferrocrete toppled forward, and more than one man was caught unawares and crushed. I narrowly avoided it myself as I chivied the rest forward with kicks, punches, and curses. They were like animals, without the wit to escape the butcher's knife. By the time we reached stable ground, the mud was surging almost to our thighs. The next part of the line was at a higher elevation and had avoided the collapse. Hands reached down to haul us up, and I heard the shouts of officers and engine seers over the babble of soldiers. I allowed myself to be dragged up and lay panting, watching as the mud rose and rolled like a river of browns and reds. There were bodies caught in the flow, drifting or tangled in bits of netting. Toxic steam rose from bursting bubbles, and I was forced back, hand over my mouth and nose. That part of the line would be unstable for days, if not longer. Exhausted now, I dragged myself to an empty shelter and sat, waiting for the ache in my limbs and lungs to subside. I wondered if my quarters had survived. They were far enough back to have avoided the worst of the upheaval, but there was no guarantee. I was too tired to worry about it over much in any case. I must have slept then, though I don't know for how long. It wasn't enough. I didn't dream. I rarely dream. Dreaming is for the weak of mind and spirit. Instead, I remembered. The events of the day or days previous played themselves back on the screen of my mind. I studied myself, noting flaws and strengths. Sometimes the God Emperor spoke to me in these memories. This time, there was no comforting voice, only the squealing of hogs. I hate hogs. That had been my first duty at the Scholar Progenium. Slop the hogs, clean the pen, again and again. They never stopped eating and rooting and rutting. Fat, slovenly, undisciplined creatures, always tearing down fences. No discipline, hogs. Couldn't be trained, couldn't be taught. They were tough. They had accompanied man to the stars, like dogs and rats. And like them, they'd found the galaxy to their liking. Where there were men, there were hogs, eating and being eaten. I still had a scar on my hip where a boar hog had tusked me, lifted me screaming and hurled me bloody into the muck. I remember them circling me, hungry and snorting, grey mounds of hairy filth gliding over the mud. And every one of them, with bright blue eyes. Only that wasn't right. I woke up knowing it wasn't right. Hogs didn't have blue eyes. The ones at the Scholar Progenium hadn't had eyes at all, having been bred for generations in underground pens. The thought startled me awake, and I sat for a moment, uncertain of where I was, heart thumping. I couldn't hear the guns. I realized now that the guns had become a sort of lodestone for me, a constant in an ever-shifting world. However the trench line warped itself, the guns were always there. I could count on them to form the borders of my world, the limits of my duty. When the guns fired, the world made sense. When they stopped, when all was silence, that was when the world seemed to grow vague and uncertain, as it did then. I hauled myself to my feet, blinking sleep from my eyes and pushing down the memories of grunting beasts. I could hear alarm klaxons ringing somewhere far behind the lines. There was smoke on the air. Something was burning. Men stood opposite, their faces turned away, watching the enemy. For an instant, I thought that the stalemate had been broken, that the enemy were on the march. But the men would have been shooting. Or would they? Uneasy, I had an image of them turning, of blue eyes staring at me from under every hood, just like the pigs at mealtime. Only the pigs had been blind. Why had I recalled otherwise? Shaking my head, I made my way over to the firing steps. I climbed up behind a pavis, noting the picked captures wedged in the overlapping plates. Unfamiliar places and faces, men and women and children. Contraband. I tore the pictures loose and crumpled them, letting them tumble into the soup. Men who thought of home inevitably had difficulty keeping their mind on the battle before them. If any of the nearby soldiers noticed, they said nothing. They ignored me, as they often did, unless someone had committed an infraction. Then all eyes were on me. I still wonder whether that was due more to fear or resentment. Either way, it suited me. The less I had to do with them, the better. We stood in silence, a row of watchful gazes. It was hard to breathe, but I left my mask where it was. To be seen donning it would be taken as a sign of weakness, worse even than wearing it. I blinked tears from my eyes as stinging vapour slithered between the pavises and the mud beneath the firing steps shifted and squirmed. I knew we all shared the same thought. What if they were drawing closer, using the quiet moments to edge their lines forwards? As I said, I am no strategist, but it seemed to me that a smart enemy would press every advantage. Our lines were static, save where the soup caused them to buckle. Maybe they had the same difficulties we did. Maybe it was all they could do to keep their own emplacements from swallowing them as ours did. "Think they're out there," a soldier muttered, breaking the silence. I glanced at her. She was like all the rest, hooded and muddy, stinking of sweat and Laz residue. Only her voice gave away her gender. She was shaking slightly. They did that sometimes, a byproduct of the constant noise and movement, or so the corpsman insisted. I, on the other hand, suspected it was a combination of fear and adrenaline, mostly because they often stopped shaking when I looked at them, and those that didn't soon didn't move at all. I didn't reply. I doubted the question was aimed at anyone in particular. They talked to hear themselves rather than to make conversation, another sign of their lack of discipline. Silence is the shield of the soul. Loose words invite damnation. I had often tried to impart this most basic of wisdoms, but the men and women of the regiment proved unduly resistant to such lessons. That was why harsher measures were often called for. I peered across the wastes between us. It was all but impossible to see past the miasma that rose from the soup and blocked all sight of the foe from us and us from them. Steam and smoke and condensation merged into an opaque curtain the colour of bile. In its undulations, I saw the barest hint of distant earthworks and the implication of an artillery piece. Familiar and yet utterly alien. I've never seen them. I realized that today. She was still talking. I've never understood why they felt the urge to talk in moments like this, especially to me. Then, in the gloom, I suppose we all looked alike. She probably didn't know who she was addressing. Are they Xenos? Human? Are they rebels or invaders or something else? She looked at me. Why are we here? Why are they shooting at us? Her voice held a pleading note, and I fought down a surge of anger. Such questions are inevitable in any conflict of a certain scale. They are also unimportant. The Imperium is at war with the entirety of a fallen galaxy, and our enemies are legion. Why did it matter, then, who they were? What mattered was that they were on the other side. Because they are our enemies, I said. Why? The question itself would have been enough to see her punished, normally. But as I made to reprimand her, I stopped. A thought had occurred to me, one I did not like. I wondered what had made her ask the question, especially of me. For the first time I turned to look at her fully. I did not know then what I was looking for. It was instinct, I think. Something was amiss, and my mind screamed a warning. I looked and was met by a pair of blue eyes staring at me from behind a rumpled mask. As had happened earlier, I froze. I admit my failing freely. I do not know what precisely I was thinking. I think perhaps I was remembering the others and the revulsion I'd felt at seeing those eyes, like the eyes of the hogs, only they hadn't had eyes, so what was I thinking of? I'm still not sure. Regardless, I had my pistol out before I realized it. My finger tightened on the trigger and the blue turned red. She pitched back into the soup, silent. The others scattered, flailing back from me, their voices like the murmur of startled vermin. They hadn't seen what I'd seen, or if they had, they hadn't understood. How could they? Simpletons. Cowards and fools. That was why they needed me, just as they'd needed me to save them in the trench earlier. Without me, this regiment would surely have collapsed. It is not hubris to say this, it is merely a statement of fact. I tore her mask off, but the face was gone, cooked from inside out to unidentifiable bone by my shot. I turned, the mask still in my hand. The others refused to meet my gaze, and I was glad. I didn't want to see those blue eyes looking at me from behind another mask, or maybe all of them. The thought sent a shiver of repulsion running through me. I looked down at the body and saw that the soup was already taking it. The battlefield was hungry. When the guns began to thunder again, I knew it would feed well today, as it had every day so far. I looked up, watching the sky burn, and felt my uncertainties burn with it. There was something going on. I could smell it, taste it on the air, mingled with the smoke and the stink of death. The colonel was worried, and it seemed he was right to be, though not for the obvious reasons. I exulted in the realization, I admit. It was as if the God Emperor were whispering to me. I could not hear him clearly then. Not yet. But I would. And I intended to do as he commanded. The Colonel called me in after that, as if I were just another cog in the war machine. I understood, of course. Two public executions, one on the heels of the other, well, that required some statement from the senior officers. Once, it might not have, but those days were past us, and things had changed, though not for the better. It wasn't just for the benefit of the regiment, but for mine as well. A reminder that if I was acting up, they'd send for a new commissar. That was the way of it. If I was acting up. If I was a faulty cog. But I wasn't. I was doing my duty, just like always. It wasn't my fault that they couldn't see that. I'd lost count of the number of times the colonel had called me in to chastise me in front of his subordinates. I was vigorous in the pursuit of my duty, and that required that he be vigorous in his, or at least be seen to be so. I like to think that he was grateful for the opportunity. Sloth is no less an enemy than vice or heresy. The command bunker was more crowded than usual when I was shown in, full of sweaty bodies covered in mud, indistinguishable. The air was more stale than usual, and I wondered if the recyclers were malfunctioning again. No one wore their hoods, but their pallid faces were all the same to me in the dim light. I suppose I would have looked the same too, but for my peaked cap and coat. It was a reminder that I wasn't like them, and I saw a look I didn't like in the eyes of some. I'd been seeing that look for a long time, and it rarely bothered me. They aren't supposed to like us. If they do, we're not doing our duty. But at that moment, I was all too conscious of it. There was a weight in it, a fierce pressure. They thought to judge me. Me. I was momentarily struck by the absurdity of their hubris. Who were they to judge me? That was my duty, not theirs. I knew my place, and I would ensure that they knew theirs. So I met their glares with my own, eye to eye, and to a man they looked away one by one. Only the colonel did not wilt before me. He never had. He turned.
"Well, Valimar, it's been too long,"
he chuckled, and the sycophants among the crowd chuckled with him.
"How many hours since I last had you in here?"
I did not reply. He nodded and looked around.
"I'm told you acted with commendable heroism in the recent line collapse. Several men reported that you saved them from the mud."
"I did my duty," I said modestly. The colonel nodded again. His smile was hard and flat.
"And then you shot someone?"
"I executed her."
"Why did you execute her?"
I racked my brain for an answer. "Incitement to heresy," I said. "She had blue eyes," I thought, but I couldn't say that. The colonel might understand, but the others wouldn't. Officers required simple answers, easy to process within the confines of their duties. They were like the men they commanded in that way, automata of meat and muscle with precious little grace. Another lesson I had learned as a boy. Don't preoccupy their minds with such things. That was my job, my duty. I looked after the soul of the regiment. They looked after its body.
"That wasn't what I heard," someone said. I looked at him. A captain, given his insignia. I knew his face, but not his name. He had soft features, the look of a child beneath his scruff of stubble. Beards were not against regimental regulations, but this one should have been. It was patchy, and the colour of bile.
"I heard you had another of your episodes, Valimar."
He spat my name like a curse, and I thought about shooting him dead there and then. But a look from the colonel made me reconsider. A murmur passed through the crowd at this assertion. They reminded me of the grunting pigs, eager to be at their meal. In this case, the meal was me. While the colonel understood my function and admitted the necessity of my presence, his subordinates lacked such clarity. They ever sought ways of discrediting me in his eyes and those of the men. I think that they feared me, or, rather, what I represented. Such men cannot fathom the limits of their own authority, of which I was a personification. When presented with such a limit, they react strongly.
"'What did you hear exactly, Duco?'
the colonel said. "'His voice was mild, almost bored, but he was listening. "'That made me uneasy. "'The colonel was patient with my methods, "'but I knew that patience was a finite resource.
"'I heard Valimar Commissar,' I interjected.
"'The captain looked at me, "'and I was startled to see the depths of his loathing "'displayed so openly on his face.'
"'I heard Commissar Valimar screamed like a maniac at that poor soul before he murdered her, "'that he murdered her for asking a question, not for heresy, for curiosity.'
"'Curiosity is heresy,' I said automatically. "'Ignorance is the shield of faith.'
"'You see,' the captain said, gesticulating, "'listen to him.' He spouts these homilies as if they explain anything. I've never seen them in any manual or book. I think he makes them up to justify his actions after the fact.
I saw heads nodding. Not firmly or fiercely, but nodding nonetheless. I made note of their faces. They would bear watching.
Duco,
the colonel said, his tone one of warning. But the captain was beyond such niceties.
"'Colonel, I know I might be overstepping my bounds, "'but even you have to admit that we can't have this black-coated ghoul "'stalking the trenches, making things worse than they already are.'
"'More nodding, more sounds of agreement, more faces to remember. "'I remembered the trench and the feeling of the mud contracting around me. "'I was getting the same feeling now.' as the captain continued with his impassioned assault on my character. He continued in this vein, growing more fervent with every insult. My palm itched for the feel of my last pistol, and I fought to control my expression. Any anger, any denial, would only further inflame the feelings against me. I wondered whether this was a spur-of-the-moment declaration of war, or whether it was more calculated. Was this the first step in an attempt to remove me from my post? I'd heard about such things, of course. Soldiers tended to try and settle such matters with a bayonet or a grenade rolled into someone's quarters as they slept. But officers were a more civilized breed. They waged war with words. They cast aspersions rather than grenades. On the whole, I couldn't say which method I preferred. As I said, I'd known for some time that they feared me, but this wasn't fear, or at least not fear alone, and that made me wary. The regiment needed me. Without me, it would perish. For their own sake, I could not allow them to usurp my authority. I glanced at the colonel, hoping he would step in. His word was law. If he declared me inviolate, then there would be nothing they could do short of mutiny, and if they mutinied... Well, I admit I almost hoped they would give in to such treacherous urges, if they had them. It would have made things simpler. I've long held the belief that too many officers render a regiment slow and unwieldy, rather than increasing its overall efficiency, and our regiment had more than its share. None had been promoted from within the ranks, of course. Soldiers do not make good officers any more than commissars do. No, they were the scions of a backwater aristocracy, born to command, as they saw it. Like me, the colonel was an outsider, but they forgave him. He was the sort of man they admired, in their own rustic fashion, but I didn't fit. I wasn't a peasant to be ordered around, nor was I their superior, so I was an enemy. And it seemed as if they had decided to remove me from the field at last. I wasn't planning to go without a fight, however. The colonel gestured as the captain finally began to wind down.
Enough, Duco. Your complaints are noted, and I will take them under consideration.
I looked at him, startled, feeling somewhat betrayed. No one was looking at me now. All eyes were on him, as was proper. He sighed and clasped his hands behind his back.
And when I say I will take them under consideration, I mean it. We are in a precarious position. We cannot afford dissension in the ranks. Nor can we afford to bicker among ourselves. More importantly, we cannot be seen to do so. The men are uneasy enough.
He looked around.
We are in this together, gentlemen.
His eyes found mine.
All of us. That means we must pull together or hang separately. That includes you, Commissar.
He was silent for a moment. Then...
No more executions.
I blinked. What?
You heard me, Valimar.
Commissar, I corrected unthinkingly. After a moment's hesitation, I asked, Are you telling me I cannot do my duty? The words tasted foul even as I said them. I was certain that I had misheard. The colonel could not mean it. I felt that there was some deeper game that I was simply too blindsided to see.
No, I am saying that you may not execute anyone without my express permission.
Again, I hesitated. That is, I am outside the chain of command, Colonel. I spoke slowly, trying to explain. Perhaps he had forgotten. You cannot order me to ignore what I see.
And I am not Valimar.
He emphasized my name, and I bit back my correction. His false eye whirred, the crimson lens focusing on me.
What I'm saying is that you must come to me before drawing that sidearm of yours. Dole out punishments as you see fit, but no executions unless I give the word.
He looked around again, and I realized, if somewhat belatedly, that the words were not just for my benefit. He was speaking to the others as well, showing them that he had me... under control. He looked back at me.
Do you understand?
I wasn't certain that I did, but I nodded, if reluctantly, and he grunted and turned away, seemingly satisfied. I relaxed slightly, as did the captain and the others. Some of them murmured among themselves, and I had the impression that they were laughing at me. The colonel's aide brought me a cup of instant recaf. It tasted stale and cold. Nothing was hot here, except for the mud. I drank anyway, chewing granules. New maps, I asked, trying to change the subject. The colonel nodded. He looked tired. I sympathized. It was a grueling task, made all the harder by the environment and the demands of his subordinates. I felt a flash of, not guilt, but regret for having added to it.
We've lost 3 sections from the trench line in the past day, including the one that almost took you. We're still trying to dig men out.
At this rate, we'll lose everything we've gained, a junior officer spoke up, one of the captain's fellows.
I studied him, wondering if his complaint was just that or something else. He didn't have blue eyes, though, just brown, like the mud, and red-rimmed from lack of sleep. A moment later, I wondered why I had thought that. Had I seen something and not realized it? The thought made me uneasy. I drank my recaf and watched them, suddenly suspicious. I thought of the soldier I had killed in the shelter, the one no one knew about yet. His eyes had turned blue just before he'd attacked me. I found my gaze drawn to the captain, but his eyes were as muddy as those of the others. And yet there was something there. I felt as if I were being watched, not just watched, observed, studied. I glanced round, trying to find the source, but saw nothing. The colonel was speaking, tapping the new maps. I wasn't listening. The air stank of the usual odours, but I thought I detected another beneath them. Something sweet and clean and entirely out of place. At that moment someone coughed behind me, the colonel's aide.
"More recalf, sir?" he murmured. I hated his voice. It lacked all authority. It was like a gust of air.
I realized that my hand had dropped to my sidearm, and I twitched it aside. No one had noticed, I thought, save perhaps the aide, and he didn't matter. I grunted and handed him my cup. Briefings had always bored me. I suspect that is why my mind wandered. As I've said, I'm not a strategist or a tactician. I go where I'm ordered and do as my duty compels me. It does not take a military genius to shoot the enemy as well as anyone who runs from the enemy. But the colonel insisted that I pay attention on the rare occasions when I was present. As he talked, I studied the picked captures and the new maps, and saw that little had changed since the last time. I may not have a head for strategy, but I have a very good memory. The lines squirmed like worms after a hard rain, but never went anywhere. I took a swallow of recaf and said, "What does command say?" Conversation stopped. It was as if I had made a rude noise. The colonel looked at me as if surprised to find me still there.
"Nothing."
"Nothing?" It came out sounding like an accusation, though I hadn't meant it to. The colonel looked at me. The bunker was silent. They were all looking at me. Deliberately, I set my cup down. It vanished a moment later. The little aide was bustling about, utterly, blissfully unaware of the tension in the air. A blessed fool is worth two faithless men.
"Are you implying something, Balamar?"
"Commissar Balamar," I corrected. The moment stretched. His eyes against mine. I ignored the others. They were little better than the rank and file, worthless save for their ability to follow orders. As I had known he would, the colonel looked back at his maps, his augmatic eye whirring and clicking.
"Commissar Balamar," he corrected absently.
"I meant no disrespect, colonel. I merely found it odd that command would ignore the forward position for so long, without some order to advance or, Emperor forfend, retreat. Instead, we sit."
"We hold position until we are given further orders."
"Hard to do when the ground squirms so," one of the others muttered. "Worse than a woman on her naming day."
Coarse laughter followed this rudimentary witticism. I did not join in. Not least because I had little idea what a naming day was, or how it pertained to a woman's movements, and in any event I prefer my women still. The colonel silenced them with a terse gesture. He had the art of it, the sharp slice of a hand, the hint of a frown. I studied him often, trying to learn the trick of it. Now I think it is simply an instinct some men have and others don't.
"Wherever the mud takes us, we will hold, until we are otherwise ordered. You are dismissed."
He looked at me.
"Balamar, stay a moment."
The captain and the others filed out. Some, like the captain, cast dark looks my way as they left. I ignored them. The colonel and I stood in silence for a long moment after the last of them had left. And then he sighed.
"What am I going to do with you, Balamar? Commissar Balamar, my apologies."
He waved aside my interjection.
"Two. In 2 days. In both cases, with little to no provocation. This can't stand."
There was provocation in both cases. I decided not to mention the man in the shelter. Something told me that it would only make things worse.
The men say different.
The men, I began. I heard the heat in my voice and forced myself to calm down. If you listen to the men, they are never at fault for their vices. They never bear responsibility for their crimes. It is always someone else's fault.
Maybe so. But sometimes it is better to look the other way.
I stared at him. We'd always had a connection, he and I. We'd always understood one another, or so I'd thought. But now, here he was, speaking heresy. I felt sick. Well, that's not what you said to me when I joined the regiment.
When you joined the regiment, it needed a strong hand. It was nothing but farmers and miners, dregs. I needed soldiers. You helped me make them soldiers. But a blade can only be sharpened so much before it breaks.
And you think, what, that they're on the verge of breaking? I set my mug down. Something is going on, Colonel. There's something happening. I can feel it.
Yes, I know. And I'm trying to head it off. I'm trying to protect you, Valimar.
He reached out, as if to put his hand on my shoulder. But I twitched aside. I don't care for being touched, even by a man I respect. I do not require protection. The colonel sighed again and looked away.
I need you, Commissar. More than that, I need you in one piece. Remember what I said.
He gestured.
Dismissed.
And so I left. It was quiet outside. The guns were silent. The only sound, the soft murmur of the mud. I turned one way and then the other, uncertain. I was still being watched. I could feel it. None of the men on duty outside the command bunker looked at me, but that didn't mean that they weren't watching me. I hesitated. The mud at my feet burbled, and bones swam briefly to the surface between the slabs of ferrocrete before sinking out of sight once more. A superstitious mind would have seen it as an omen, but I am not superstitious. I looked back at the command bunker and saw the colonel's aide watching me from near the entrance, a narc stick dangling from his lips. I hadn't even noticed him there. He nodded to me, as if we were acquaintances. I resisted the urge to berate him, and made my way down the line. The guns started up not long after. When I got back to my quarters, I found that someone had broken in. The lock had been violently pried apart. I do not know even now what they were after. Nothing had been taken from my collection of contraband. None of my manuals had been disturbed, nor my paperwork. All was as it had been. But the entrance was unlocked, and there was a smell on the air, a smell that made me think of blue eyes. I sat for a time, letting my gaze roam, trying to find anything out of place. Even the smallest difference might point me in the direction of the perpetrator. But there was nothing. It was as if they'd broken in just to look. I'd have felt less violated, I think, if they'd stolen something. Then the motive would have been obvious and my response justified. Instead, I felt as if I had entered a dark forest and wandered from the path. Nothing made sense. Old certainties were fraying. Even the colonel couldn't be counted on. Outside, soldiers tried not to meet my eyes as I left my quarters. They huddled against the sides of the trench, talking in low voices, all but inaudible beneath the crash of enemy artillery. They knew something. They might not know that they knew, but they did. Had they been watching as the culprit invaded my sanctum? Had they helped? I stared at them, my hand on my weapon.
The burning sky cast long shadows that obscured either side of the trench, and for an instant it seemed as if every man had blue eyes, and all of them were fixed on me.
"Having trouble, Commissar?"
I spun, last pistol half-drawn. It was the captain, watching me from a higher part of the trench. He was wearing his mask, but I could tell he was smiling.
"No,"
I said as I straightened.
"Are you sure? You seem upset. Maybe it's the air. It's quite foul. You should wear your mask. Can't have you keeling over from accumulated toxins, can we?"
I looked up at him. He was mocking me. I wasn't bothered by it, only by the fact that he felt brave enough to do so. Mindful of the colonel's orders, I fought to keep my voice even. "I shall take it under advisement." He climbed down to my part of the trench. Men drew away from him. It was difficult to tell who they were more frightened of, him or me. I left my hand on my pistol. I wondered if he had come alone. If so, he was a bigger fool than I thought. He looked at my quarters.
"Is this your kennel, then? Far from the rest of us? That's not quite regulation, is it?"
"I value my privacy."
"My privacy, sir."
I allowed myself to smile. "I value my privacy." He made a sound that might have been a growl or a laugh. It was hard to tell with his mask.
"He's been covering for you for a long time, Valimar, but he won't be around forever."
I didn't bother to correct him.
"Is that a threat, Captain? Does it matter? You can't do anything about it. He's muzzled you."
"I think you'll find that I still have my teeth." My fingers tapped tunelessly against my weapon. The captain glanced at it and then back to me. His hand fell to his own sidearm.
"You wouldn't dare,"
he spoke quietly, no arrogance to him. "It's not a matter of daring, but of duty.
If you kill me, you won't last the day."
I looked up at the burning sky. The toxic clouds seemed to twist into a familiar shape as I watched, and I felt a sense of peace. I took a deep breath and dropped my gaze. "We're all living on borrowed time, Captain."
"Some more than others,"
he said after a moment. He stepped back, deliberate and slow. I didn't relax.
"Look at you, the Colonel's mad dog. How many bodies has he buried for you? How many have you buried for him?"
"I follow orders, just like you," the captain snorted.
"I'm nothing like you."
He turned away, as if daring me to shoot him. I was tempted. The colonel's orders were clear. But as the captain climbed back up to the higher trench, he glanced back at me, and in the flare of artillery, I thought I saw a flash of blue before he turned away. I knew then that the God Emperor was speaking to me, showing me the enemy, the true enemy, not the ones across the field, but the ones at my back. The most dangerous enemy is the foe within, as the regimental primer often reminded me. There was a conspiracy afoot. The captain had as good as admitted it, but I didn't know what to do about it. My training had not prepared me for investigative work. If a commissar found a problem, he removed it. No man, no problem. That was the way it had always been, but now I couldn't, thanks to the colonel. I was forced to improvise. I took fewer chances. I followed the colonel's advice. I was a good soldier, and I knew that he was right, as much as it pains me to admit it. Even now, I needed to be more careful, cautious. It was more important to find out what was going on than to punish every single infraction, no matter how much my soul rebelled at the thought. Especially if I was being watched. Perhaps they were seeking to discredit me,
to provoke me. Perhaps that was what the colonel had been trying to warn me about. So I waited, and I watched. I studied the men the way I'd once studied birds and rats. I went to where they congregated and watched them talk in low tones, watched them eat and drink, watched for patterns, as I had with the birds when I was a boy. Day after day, week after week. And so it went. There are patterns in everything. Nothing is random, not really. There was a pattern to the enemy gun and a pattern to ours, the same firing sequence over and over again, whether those manning the weapons recognized it or not, and there was a pattern to the eyes. As I was watching them, I realized that they were watching me, studying me as I studied them. We both hid in plain sight, I in the trenches, and they in the bodies of men. More and more of them every day, their numbers swelling and ours shrinking. They whispered in corners, questioning our purpose and the colonel's decisions. They spoke of defeat and death, of surrender. Teeming hordes of blue-eyed devils infiltrating and weakening our position. And only I could see them. Everywhere it was the same. There were flaws in the wall, cracks growing wider with every passing cycle. But despite recognizing them, I couldn't identify them. Nonsensical, I know, but true nonetheless. A man might have blue eyes one moment and brown the next. I saw them out of the corner of my eye, or fleetingly as they turned a corner or ducked into a shelter. Only among the common soldiers, never among the officers. Not then. Save for the captain. He was one of them, I was sure of it. But he kept his distance from me. Perhaps he suspected that I knew his secret. Perhaps he was simply wary of me after our encounter in the trench. Often I caught a glimpse of him, watching me from a distance. Sometimes it wasn't him, but those I recognized as his cronies. Sometimes it was just the soldiers, watching me with their unnatural eyes. What were they? Even now, I don't know. Were they even men any more? Or was it simply a cosmetic alteration? I'd heard stories of corruption, of plagues of unbelief, but this seemed subtler, more precise, not witchcraft, but a weapon, perhaps, a toxin, spreading dissent through the trenches. Maybe it was in the air or in the water. I gnawed over those questions for days, weeks. I circled them so often I lost all sense of why I was worrying until I'd catch another flash of blue peering at me through the goggles of an environmental hood. And then I'd remember, and it would start all over again. The only thing I was sure of was that it faded in death. I had learned that much from my second kill. Blue eyes gone brown. As if whatever had gripped him had fled the moment I'd driven the knife in. I killed another, to make sure, however, quietly, so as not to arouse suspicion. Of course, I waited until I saw an obvious infraction. I'm not a murderer. It was easy. I chose my moment well. The guns sounded and the sky burned. The trenches twisted about us and men scattered to their posts as alert klaxons sounded. All but one, who headed for the latrines. That could be considered cowardice in the face of the enemy from a certain point of view. If a man can't hold his water in battle, what use is he? I followed him. He never saw me. I made sure of that. I wasn't wearing my coat or my cap. I'd left the signs of my authority in my quarters and wore only my uniform, stained with mud like everyone's, and my environmental hood. It was uncomfortable, but one must make sacrifices for the good of the regiment. It is all that the God Emperor asks of us. There were designated latrines on every section of trench. Mostly they were holes dug in the mud and kept stable by netting and scrap.
Benches lined the holes, and the whole affair was hidden from sight by a tarpaulin. The soup ate whatever it was given, so there was little need to clean them, though I often bestowed it as a punishment detail. I followed him in, dropped the netting that hid the interior from view, and waited for him to begin. Less messy that way. If he noticed me, he said nothing. Maybe he thought I was looking to hide, or perhaps he simply didn't care. The soldiers learned quickly not to ask questions of each other, especially in the latrine. I sat by the door and watched the trench through the drapes. Shadows danced along the trench wall, mocking and thin. I watched as they twitched in time to the pounding of the guns. The way they danced and twisted reminded me of something, but I could not say what. I knew only that it made me feel vaguely ill, and I quickly turned away. My prey sang softly between grunts, and I was almost lulled by it. It was a song they all sang, some pastoral ditty from their home world. They were all farmers or the sons and daughters of farmers. Why anyone had thought they would make good soldiers, I couldn't say. A good soldier must be quick and hard, with a taste for violence. The best soldiers come from hive cities, I think. They breed them nasty in the dark tunnels and cramped streets. But farmers have a certain rural pragmatism to them, even if it is so rarely evident. Both die equally well, I suppose. And that is their purpose, after all, to die for the God Emperor, to make a wall of meat and piety, to wring his holdings and hold back the long night. That was, is, my purpose as well. And a glorious one it is. To die in his name. What greater joy could a man have, I ask you? Perhaps only to kill for him. Outside, the guns hammered at the air, theirs and ours, like the heartbeats of dueling giants. I wondered when they would finally grow tired of this game, when they would advance at last into the teeth of our guns. Or would they? Perhaps they were waiting for something else. It was something I had begun to consider deep in the recesses of my paranoia, that what I had stumbled onto was not random at all or unconnected, but part of some grand enemy plot. There was no evidence for it, save what I felt. But a commissar must trust his instincts. And mine were screaming a warning that this conspiracy was deeper than I thought. In the end, that is why I decided to start my experiments. I needed to understand them, to learn everything about them. The man in the latrine was but the first. I waited for him to finish, as I said. When he sighed and made to stand, trousers half raised, I lunged. I had brought the bayonet, the one I'd taken as a contraband. It was a good blade, light, sharp. It did the job with commendable efficiency. I opened him there, gizzard to gullet, just as I had the birds as a boy. Though you wouldn't know it from appearances, the human body is essentially a bag of water, acids, bile, and blood. All of this spills out when you cut someone deep enough. You have to be quick to avoid getting it on yourself, particularly in a confined space. Luckily, I knew the trick of it. He fell back with a startled sound, almost a sigh, as if he could not believe what was happening. Then again, how many people truly expect to die in a latrine? I held his chin as he bled out like a pig at slaughter. I watched his eyes go from blue to brown as he subsided. I made note of the time. A few moments. I wiped the bayonet clean on his sleeve and searched him. I found the usual bric-a-brac, most of which I confiscated. I intended to study it later, to see what secrets it might hold. I never did, though. Things became busy after that. It was child's play to slip out of the latrine. No one was paying attention. All eyes were on the enemy when the guns sounded. It was the same the second time and the third. In both cases, I watched my prey for hours, caught them alone, and timed their death to coincide with the guns. In both cases, their eyes changed. With the third, when I thought I had the time down, I tried to gouge out the eyes before they changed, only to find the bloody orbs going brown in my fingers. After that, I decided a new experiment was called for. I needed to question one of them. But for that, I knew that I would require a bit of privacy.
"A scouting mission,"
the colonel said, looking at me with that single, unblinking red eye. The command bunker was as crowded as ever, full of parasites in uniform. I'd come to loathe them over the weeks of watching. In my disguise, I'd seen thousands of infractions, some small, some large. I knew them now for scum, one and all. I'd begun to wish that the hot rain would pour down and drown almost every living thing in the trenches. I was rapidly coming to the conclusion that the regiment could not be salvaged. As I said, it was my third kill that decided me. She'd been a sergeant. I'd thought, I'd hoped, that the affliction, the curse, whatever you like to call it, had not reached the officers, save perhaps the captain. But it had been a vain hope. The infection was rampant. Everywhere I looked, blue eyes. In the mess, in the shelters, in the rain. A few days after my third kill, I realized that the thunder of the guns drew them out. They hid well during the quiet moments, but as soon as the guns sounded, I had little trouble spotting them. Part of me suspected that it was a signal of some sort, perhaps in the pattern of strikes, or maybe the sound of it exposed them somehow. Regardless, I formulated a plan, but it required nerve and daring, two qualities I possessed in abundance. It is not hubris to say this, for one cannot be a commissar without them. "We are locked in a stalemate," I said, looking around the bunker. "If we cannot advance without orders, at the very least we can try and get a more accurate idea of the enemy's positioning. We can determine a potential weak point, just in case."
"Are you that bored, commissar?"
he asked. But even as he said it, I knew he would agree. He saw the wisdom in it, even if he didn't understand my true motives. Intelligence is an oft-overlooked element of any campaign. Too many commanders rely on brute force to win the day. Striking a blow against the enemy is all well and good, but it is best to strike them in the place that will do the most damage when the time comes. "In point of fact, I am," I said. A low titter ran through the assembled officers. "Since I cannot perform my duty in one way, let me do it in another. I will go out into the wastes between our lines and theirs and see what I can see." "Alone?" the captain asked. He'd been silent for a time. I knew he'd been watching me, but I also knew that his spies in the regiment had reported nothing back to him. They thought me a fool, blunt and unimaginative. They could not conceive of me shedding my trappings of office in order to hunt my prey, or so I hoped at the time. "Ideally, no, though I'd understand it if no one wanted to come."